Blog Talk Radio.
Today's early bird secret password is comb. Today's early bird secret password is comb.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, marvelous Monday, August 13th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. Snap-lock chicken coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice,
continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, it's Marvelous Monday, and it's going to be even more marvelous because right now I'm going to bring on my wonderful co-host, Poultry Advocate Animal.
Poultry Advocate Animal.
Yeah. You guessed it. It is.
Oh, hey, Whisper. Tongue-tied this early morning. I think I am, too. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I got echo again. Let me put you on hold. Okay, when I put you on hold, Pat, the echo goes away. So, and when you first came on, it sounded like you were talking right into the microphone with no wind cover. So I don't know if you can try to maybe call back in or change mics or what have you. I'll be and then we can see what we can do with that. Are you there? Okay, good.
Okay,
maybe. Maybe she's checking her mic. But I'll get back to Pat here in just a second. But so glad to have her with us today on the show. We are also very privileged to have today, being Monday, the chicken doctor, Peter Brown. He's going to be joining us today. He's going to wrap up his topic on the chicken sense of smell and then kind of roll into his next topic, which is the chicken sense of taste. And so he's kind of going through the senses here on the radio show. So today he's going to wrap up the chicken's sense of smell. I had a great show last Monday about that. And then he'll try to get into, again, the chicken's sense of taste on today's show. And that'll be with Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. So we're glad to have him on the show today. Let's kind of review the week here for a second. Looks like today we've got, of course, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. Tomorrow, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, the ALBC, is going to be here. And tomorrow's topic is going to be all about a rare goat project that's in British Columbia, and Jeanette's trip there to actually research them. So that's going to be very interesting tomorrow with the ALBC, one of the other great experts that join us here on the show. And let's see, let me get over here. Let's see, Wednesday, it looks like, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Who doesn't love that show? We'll find out what her wine of choice is this Wednesday, and then year-round gardening topic to follow this Thursday. Yep, you guessed it. Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD and poultry scientist, are going to be joining us. And if you'll give me a second, I'll tell you exactly what that topic is going to be about. Let me scroll down here a little bit, and I'll tell you. Let's see what we got here. 2012 topics, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. Poultry scientist. Let's see what we got. And professor. Let's see. It's going to be, what, August the 16th? Feeding for the Seasons. Feeding for the Seasons is going to be this Thursday. And then remember, folks, no show this Friday. I will actually be on the road. I will be on the road. Jen has her first, starting the school year, her first meet and greet. And it's about a 50-minute drive away from where we're going to actually have that. So there will be no show this coming Friday. That means we have to give all the Fun Friday prizes away, actually, hang on just a second. Let me, okay, they got booted. So, they're gone. All righty. Had a crazy person in the chat room. So they're gone. If they come back, let me know and I'll boot them. I've got the power. Okay, let's get back over here and see if Pat's called back in. Here we go. Pat Foreman.
Is that any better now, Whisper?
Yeah, a little better.
A little better. Okay. This headset, there's one headset that just seems to be okay for normal conversation, but not for the radio. So I've got to get a couple new headsets here. I've worn them out, I think, being on the show so much.
Absolutely.
So much.
Yeah, I've got one just like that, so I'm having to use a newer than the one that my wife got, and I've got to order another one myself. So we got a great lineup all week this week here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And great topics, great guests, and today is no exception. So you got something to look forward to. And I always say, if you can tune in every day at noon, your day not only will go by faster, but your week will go by faster too. And next thing you know, it will be Friday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So, Pat, what's going on? What did you do on the homestead over the weekend?
Oh, I had so much fun. Went over to Orange County and the city of Orange, and there was a festival there. And, of course, it was a heritage food and local foods festival. And, my gosh, I made some really nice contacts. And then Joel Salatin spoke. So anytime Joel talks, of course, he gets everybody all riled up. And he just gave a wonderful talk about, you know, how agriculture hasn't, you know, it's not because of the petrochemicals that we're using as plant enhancement products, but it's also the mechanization that came in about the same time and that allowed us to plant more and do more. And also about the same time was the composting side of it that got squished by, squished in history basically by the chemical companies, but it might be coming back around. It was a wonderful talk, had a great day, had some really good food, and came back and took a long deep cycle nap and then mowed pretty much the rest of the weekend. I was bush hogged, which I enjoy doing. You know, it's like instant gratification. You're going along and you don't have to look at the screen or punch any keys or anything, and then you look back and it's all nice. Nice, neat rows, hopefully, and it's just a, so that was pretty much my weekend. I slept, went to a festival, and bush hogged. How about you?
Sounds awesome. I need to get somebody to come. I've got the tractor, but, you know, when we moved down here, I sold my bush hog because I thought I don't have any, you know, pasture. I don't have any, like, big fields. It's all going to be garden and produce and things like that. You know, a ride mower and a weed eater is all we really need. But come to find out that I'm going to borrow my neighbor's bush hog and attach it to my tractor or have someone come because the garden has quite grown up, and instead of spending my time, yeah, Jen's time, and labor time out there pulling up the corn and all the stalks and things, we're just going to bush hog the whole thing all the way down, and then I can actually get the disc harrow on the tractor at that point and kind of get that work down into the end of the soil, get some extra nitrogen, mm-hmm, as that actually breaks down. So that's kind of the game plan.
Right.
And we're looking forward to that with Jen's online virtual school, because we hope to do some live streaming of kind of things that we're going to do. I think we're going to have some of her students pick out what we're going to plant this fall, which is kind of neat. So they'll be interactive with the garden. We'll do maybe a live spot when we go over to the farm center and get our seeds and purchase them for the backyard garden. And then every step of the way, watch it grow, you know, the cultivating of it and plowing and things like that, and then actually watching it grow all the way through harvest, have maybe one show a week or a couple of months live stream with her classroom, because so many people just, again, have no idea in the world where their food comes from. So I'm really looking forward to that. And, of course, we'll do live stream hatching again this year with her students and a bunch of other things. So I am looking forward to that this year with her classroom and gardening, because, you know, when she implemented that at her last her real school, her brick and mortar school where she worked at for many years, you know, she got raised bed gardens for every kindergarten classrooms, and she implemented,
oh,
you know,
fabulous,
doing, yeah, everything, the great, teaching math, yeah, English. You can teach any subject in a garden, any subject at all. So we're,
that's
really
true,
looking, we're really, really looking forward to really
even
looking forward to
physics, it, physics, believe it or not, you can teach in a garden.
Absolutely
yeah.
I believe that 100%.
Hey, I got to say, too, you leaving the corn stalks and all that biomass there to break down and build up your topsoil, and that is completing the carbon cycles as a little science project here. And Joel said that if all the ranchers, if all the cattle ranchers and the horse, you know, livestock ranchers would recycle on pasture their manure and build the topsoil up, that we could carbon sequester enough carbon to really turn this global warming around. I don't know what you feel about global warming, but something's getting us awful hot. But wouldn't that be something if we could take all that manure and put it back in the land where it completes nature's cycle, just like,
yeah,
you're doing down there in Ideal, Georgia?
We're trying, yep, the best we can. I thought about that, and I was like, man, it's just it's such great nitrogen source, and we're just going to do that. So just, till then, we'll explain that, just like you said, to some of the kids. These are second graders. She did it with all of her kindergartens up there in at her old school, and so now she's second grade. So, we'll do things. I mean, the whole video, we'll walk by my tractor, say, hey, this is my old tractor. It's a 1954, and it's, of course, tell us how old it is, so they can do the math right there live and say, tell us how old it's 1954, so you can tell us how old it is, and then we'll come back to the tractor and say, okay, now who figured it out? How old is Andy's tractor? So we're going to have some fun with that. And it still cranks up, and it still runs like a top. So very cool. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that and teaching some of the kids along the way with her school about everything we do at the homestead. I think they desperately need it. Desperately need us. New Dawn Farm Girl says that they always turn under their crops. So that's awesome as well. And a New Dawn Farm Girl says her daughter will be teaching virtual school. It's kind of the new thing. This is a public school. It's really interesting. It is a Georgia public school, so it's free for all to attend if they can get accepted. And it's I forget how many students they have in Georgia, something like 15,000 total. And they're adding 11th grade this year. They'll add 12th grade next year, and then it'll be K through 12 total virtual. So it's kind of like a home school. There's a teaching coach at home, doesn't have to be a parent, but a teaching coach, most of the time it is a parent, however, and they get all the curriculum mailed to them free because, again, it's a Georgia public school. Yeah. It's paid through tax dollars. And then they get all the...
That's supposed to make a homeschool online, is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right, yeah. School? Yeah, but it's a public school. It's really neat. It's a public/charter school, so it's a public school, so people can attend for free, and the learning coach is at home, whether it be mom, dad, or a grandma, or whoever, uncle. Absolutely. There you go. And so they get all the curriculum sent to them. If they are actually financially challenged, they'll get a computer actually sent to them as well. And then they do online classes. They have curriculum that's sent to them, books, things like that. And then Jen teaches so many classes online live to her class per week. And then she does, I think,
do they
one.
Have a special medium to do that? Something like GoToMeeting, or how do they?
Oh man, it's really high tech. I have no idea. I'm sure it's some special software that's installed at their servers up at the main headquarters up in Atlanta. It's very cool because she can do video. She can have them write on the screen. She can write on the screen with a pen. It's really, really cool. And so she can do a lot of interactive stuff with having the kid take over the mouse and click on things. It's just amazing. So it is pretty cool. But it's so she's in the process. I guess today is the first day of school for the students. She's been at it for about 3 weeks now, meetings and getting things ready. And then I think her classes that she starts teaching, even though curriculum at home starts today, I think her first online class is something around September or something like that. So well, she'll actually start teaching in the online classroom. So, but it's pretty neat. And so we're looking. It's different because it's not quite hands-on like we had at our other school, but still we can do live stream, and so they can still participate, or we can do videos and post them, and things like that. So it's still pretty neat. So she's working on that as we speak in the other room. So. But let's see, over the weekend, it was a pretty calm and lazy weekend. We didn't do too much around here as far as on the homestead, but we did get some rest and relaxation that we were definitely looking forward to. So it was a good time. We had a good time with Caleb and spent a lot of time with him, so had a good time. Hey, I didn't know if anybody in the chat room, keep it to yourself, got the early bird secret password, but we did if you were here on time and a good student and got in here by the time the late bell rang. Then you picked up an early bird secret password, and we're going to go ahead and give away that prize right now. And if you actually were here on time and received the early bird secret password, then you're going to win an awesome hen saver hen apron from Crazy K Farm for one in your flock. So whether you have bantams or large fowl or whatever you got, they make a size for it. And so what we're going to do real quick before we bring Peter Brown on is we're going to give away this Hen Saver Hen Apron to somebody that was here on time this morning. So we'll take caller number 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Give us a call in right now. Caller number 3, if you know today's early bird secret password, you're going to get a Hen Saver Hen Apron from our friends Crazy K Farm, and you can visit them online specifically at their apron site, hensaver.com, hensaver.com. So don't rely on an imitation or a Johnny Come Lately. These things, she sold over 10,000, and these puppies are built to last. They are awesome. So hensaver.com. And caller number 3 right now, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237, Hen Saver Hen Apron. And see, Sweet Potato says that she was late, but she doesn't do the password thing anyway, so she's okay. Okay, well, maybe tomorrow I'll give away a chicken coop for the early bird secret password prize. Then you'll be sorry, won't you, Sweet Potato? So maybe, you never know, could be. Maybe tomorrow the early bird secret password prize will be a chicken coop. And then we'll see if you post in there, oh, well, I just don't do the password thing. Oh, sucks for you. You just missed out on a chicken coop. Got to love it. Okay, let's get over here to the switchboard, and we'll go to call number 3 right away. Caller calling in from area code 304. 304, your lucky caller number 3. State your name and tell us what
Alyssa.
State. Hey, Alyssa, how are you? What state are you calling from in? Calling
West
from?
West Virginia.
West Virginia. Perfect. Thanks you for listening to the show. We appreciate it. And what is today's early bird secret password?
Comb.
It is comb. Yes, absolutely. Congratulations. In fact, actually, I think I've got one here that says congratulations just to add a little fun here to it.
Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations.
So, I love that.
That plays.
Almost mile. Congratulate you.
Yeah. Gotta love it. So, well, Alyssa, you have won a Hen Saver Hen Apron for being here on time today. That is your reward. Thank you very much for participating. And just go ahead and send me over an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. And then put a Hen Saver in the subject line. That's Hen Saver in the subject line. And then I'll need your, let's see, your name, your shipping address, your phone number, and your email address in the email itself. So I can get that over to Toby at Crazy K Farm because you were on time and early today. You got the early bird secret password, and you won this great prize. I hope you enjoy it. The reason why I need your phone number specifically on this prize is that if she may call you to ask if you want the camo or the pink one or the blue one or the pastel one, and if you need a large file size or a bantam size or if you want the shoulder pads on it, all this kind of stuff. So she may want to contact you regarding that. So very, very good. And so thank you. That's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. All righty, getting over here to the phone lines. We'll bring Peter Brown on. I believe I got a few questions over from our Facebook page to ask him first up before we get to today's wrap-up of the chicken's sense of smell and getting into the chicken's sense of taste. So let me go ahead and bring – hey, Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, doing pretty good. It's Monday, but as Pat says, it's marvelous Monday.
Marvelous Monday.
Marvelous.
Welcome, Peter.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
Fabulous. A marvelous Monday.
Me too.
Life is good. How are you doing, Peter? You behaving yourself and getting that ticker all back in shape?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm doing pretty well. excuse me. I am very close to my goal weight at this point, within shouting distance of it. And I've
did you say your gold weight? Are you trying to be having your weight in gold? You'd be
no. If you had my weight in gold, you'd probably be doing pretty good.
I guess.
Oh, if you figure 454 grams to the ounce and to the pound rather, and you know 200 pounds, and then multiply it out and figuring out that you know the cost of gold now, I think I saw a sign here in town the other day, almost $1,700. So
is it an ounce?
I believe so.
Yeah.
An ounce of gold is $1,700?
Most of it. Too long ago, and it's so funny. Back, I remember on this radio show when we started this about 4 years ago, I was telling people, you know, buy your gold, buy your silver. Silver back then was, when I started silver, it was about $7 an ounce, and it almost hit 40. It went over $40 an ounce here not too long ago. It's dropped back down to probably around $30 an ounce. But when I started telling people to buy silver, it was about $7.50 an ounce. And gold was probably around $700 an ounce when we were telling people to buy gold if they could afford it. And now it's almost hit $2,000 an ounce in the last few months. And silver topped $40, $42 an ounce. It's dropped back down to probably the high 20s, low 30s, where it's been for a while. But that's still probably, what, five times your money? You're listening to the old chicken whisperer here, Joe.
You're
right.
You know, I took your advice, Whisper. I bought $1,000 worth of silver at the place called Silver City, Indiana. So, and that had to be at least a pound. It seemed like pretty heavy. But yeah, I looked at that and looked at that $1,000. I thought, oh my gosh, that's all I get. There's got to be more than that.
Yep. And I just think you probably, let's see, I'm not sure, I don't remember what when that was or what it was per ounce at that point, but you've probably at least tripled your money.
Probably. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very good.
Well, they were just saying today on the news, you know, the Fed is, their job is to keep inflation down and jobs up, and part of that is concerned about, you know, inflation. I don't know. It seems like everywhere I look, prices are just going up. They're just easing up and up and up. And maybe I'm just in sticker shock from earlier days, but, boy, I don't know how people on fixed income are doing it.
I'm not right there with you, Pat. When I go to the grocery store, I was jumping for joy. I came inside. I gave it to Jen. I came inside and I was like, "Hey, Jen, we signed up," because I'm not a big card carrying discount card type of dude, you know, with all those things on your keychain you scan for this, that, or the other. In fact, I can tell you, I do too. You can actually look this up. This is factual information about how these things seem innocent, but how they can be used against you with Big Brother. I will tell you right now, a lady, her grocery list and what she bought was used against her in a court of law because they actually went and got a warrant or a subpoena or whatever they do to get her grocery card every time she scans it when she buys groceries. And they took that into a court of law and showed that supposedly, based on what she was buying, she was malnourishing her children. Beer, cigarettes. Oh, look, Cocoa Pebbles. Oh, look, it was a pizza. No bananas, no grapes, no raisins, cigarettes. Look at that. Look at her shopping list. Does that look like a good mom to you? And so those things, you have to be very, very careful. You can do it, I guess, here's the key. You can, I guess, do it anonymously. Fill out the form as John Doe with a fictitious address and all of that. But it doesn't matter if you go and pay with your debit or credit card, because then guess what? They know who just bought that, whether you registered as John Doe with that little rewards card or not, because you used your credit card or debit card to pay for it. So if you're going to do it where nobody can come and try, you got to do it John Doe, and then you have to pay cash every time you go, and then it's just, who, you're not going to do it. You're like, oh, well, I'll just use my card this time. So, yeah, good luck with that. But walked in, I got $10 off a $50 purchase at Winn-Dixie, and then a box of free diapers and a box of free wipes just for giving them the coupon. So I was like, hey, check this out, Jen. It's about time for us to go to the store anyway. So, I decided, I guess it was about a month ago, to participate with their little card thing because they give you a discount on gas. And so based on what you spend or what items you buy, you'll get discounts on gas. And so right now I think the receipt said next time I go fill up at Shell, I get 65 cents off per gallon. And so we need to go to the store here probably the end of this week. Maybe this coming weekend we'll go to the grocery store. We'll go back to Winn-Dixie. We'll get a few things. I'll get my $10 off. I'll get a free thing of diapers, a free thing of wipes. And then I'll go and fill up at Shell, and by then I might have like 75, 80, 90 cents off per gallon. So that'll say if I fill up 20 gallons and I'm saving a buck a gallon, that's 20 bucks right there. And the catch, though, is, and everybody knows this, the catch is that if you cut coupons and use those coupons to buy crap that you don't use anyway, you're not saving any damn money. That's the bottom line. I'm going to save a dollar on Fritos. Well, if you don't say five Fritos every week, you just got sucked into that trap, and you just paid more than you would if you didn't cut the damn coupon. So, everybody, know that already, so you have to be careful with this gas card. Oh, if I buy this item, I will save another 5 cents per gallon. If I use 20 gallons, that's about a dollar off of my gas when I fill up, but this item would cost me $4 that I don't really buy anyway, so I'm out $3 when I do it. So it's pretty good. Pretty good. I don't want to find a card for doing, but we asked that when I walked in. I'm like, hey, $10, just save $10. But yeah, you're right, talking about, you know, fixed income and the food prices, they're absolutely insane. And I'll tell you, my little boy, last night at supper.
Andy, you're cutting in and out quite a bit. I how does he sound to you, Peter?
Yeah, he's cutting in. Yeah, about every other word.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's hard to hear your sentences.
Interesting.
You want to call back in, and Peter and I will carry on until you come back?
Let's just go ahead and have Peter start off, and we'll wrap up where we left off regarding the chicken's sense of smell. And then, actually, you know what? We can't do that. I promised everybody that I would get some questions off Facebook. So give me just a second, and I'll do the question. And while he's kind of covering that, then I will then I'll call back in while he's answering it. So let me go over here, just a few on over here on my Facebook page from today when we posted that Peter was going to be joining us. So we'll get these out of the way here really quick. Got some interesting here. The first one here is, what do scaly pale combs mean, and what could dark points on the combs be? So two questions from Wanda. Scaly pale combs, what may be causing that, and what would cause dark points actually on the combs? And we'll let you answer that, and I'll call back in and see if I can't get a better signal.
Well, the whitish, what appears to be scaly material that appears on a bird's comb after a while is an indication of her position in her lay cycle. And generally, they'll pick up this, it's called scurf, and it's sometimes you can clean it off a little bit, sometimes you can't, but it's it's not a disease per se. It's an indication of where the bird is laying-wise. The more it has, generally, the less the bird is laying or maybe totally out of production. We did talk about that probably late last year, early this year. We talked about how to tell if a bird was in production or not. And that can be, you know, the production cycle. Again, we talked about the circadian clock and how it controls a bird's production cycle based on a lot of different parameters, the availability of feed. The better the quality of feed that's available, generally most birds will continue on laying without too much difficulty. The scarceness of feed can cause them to certainly quit laying eggs, and then they start to develop this scurf slowly on the comb, and it'll generally go away after a bird has gone through a molt or has gone back into production. So it's generally not something to get totally upset about, but you might want to look into the parameters of what might be causing it from a standpoint of nutrition, lighting, any of those kinds of things that would put the bird in that particular position. Now, on the flip side of that, one where it looks like it has been dusted with cooking flour, that would throw us into a position where we might look at that as an actual disease entity, and we would look at that possibly as being a case of favus, which is a fungal infection on the comb. And the fungal infections generally take place for the most part in your more tropical parts of the country, Florida, Louisiana, southern Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, and all those places down there where it stays warmer year-round and more moist year-round. But it can happen anywhere as far as the favus is concerned. Generally, slow spreading will spread bird to bird, but it does. It takes a while for it to do that. But as far as the points of the cone becoming dark, generally it's a lack of blood flow. If it isn't being caused by the birds being exposed to the winter and a little bit of frostbite, generally when we start seeing dark points on the ends of the comb, we'll start looking at birds that have maybe reproductive problems, maybe intestinal problems, where the blood flow is reduced to the comb, and they generally don't get black, but it appears that way, but it's more blue than black when you really do end up looking at it. But generally, those are the things that will cause indication of poor health as a general rule. And again, some of the things that I'd look at is a possibility of coccidiosis, a possibility of enteritis. Those kinds of things will upset the intestine. We did talk about for a while, excuse me, we talked about the intestinal flora, how important it is to use a probiotic to keep the intestine populated with the proper gut-friendly bacteria that will allow the intestine to thrive. One of the things that most people don't understand, and we talked about it some back when we went over the digestive system and everything else, but a good portion of a bird's immune system is located in the intestinal tract at different locations throughout the intestine. So when you have damage to the bird's intestine, you have damage to the immune system at the same time, which makes it harder for birds to recover. So,
and that's true with people too, Peter. We know now.
The evidence on both sides of the fence, human and animal, chicken included, is becoming more and more overwhelming to the fact that good gut health. Even in humans, they're looking at poor gut health and the wrong bacteria being present in the gut being responsible for some parts of schizophrenia and stuff. So it's a very interesting, complicated
That's exactly right.
You know, system. And
For those listeners that are more interested in this, can I just put a little note in?
Sure.
An FYI, and that is there's a procedure called the gut and psychology syndrome, or GAPS. Gut and psychology syndrome, and it's specifically to go through and enhance, get rid of the toxins, and then enhance the good gut activity in humans. But I think it also applies to animals. And I know when I can't figure out what's going on with an animal, Peter, per your advice, I'll give them some probiotics and some good nutritional kind of boosters, and oftentimes that'll take care of it.
Yeah, it makes a big difference too, especially. With the chickens and stuff being, a good portion of the immune system being located in different portions of the intestine itself. Damage there impairs the bird's ability to recover. The reason chickens go downhill so quickly is that, they don't have any diaphragm like we do to separate things out. So, one infection in one area starts an infection in the other very easily, and it bounces from one place to another, and they go downhill extremely quickly. And we're starting to find that out too with humans and some of these people with some of these MRSA infections and some of these septicemic infections, the blood infections, and so on and so forth. The bacteria that cause these things don't appear to be any big deal in the very beginning, and so they're taken lightly by the caregivers, and then all of a sudden they rear back and show their ugly head, and in 24, 48 hours you're either dead or close to it, and then they start, as we've all seen in the news, the amputation of limbs and fingers and hands and arms and legs. And
Peter, you know what would be a really interesting study is to look at those that have had really horrible problems like you've just described with getting infections, and then overnight their bodies being eaten away, just to see what diets they're on and what they sort of been eating with their immune systems. And
I think that might shed some light on it, but by the same token, some of these bacteria are extremely aggressive. You know, that little boy that died out in San Diego about a month ago now, he was just swimming in the water. and it attacked his skin, and in 24, 48 hours, if my memory serves me correctly, he was dead. And it was a problem where they didn't recognize the severity of the disease right off the bat. And there are a lot of others out there too, where this blood septicemia, where it's actually a blood infection, which makes it worse because your blood travels to every part of your body, every little nook and cranny, and if it's got a rogue bacteria in it that's capable of doing these things, it doesn't take long for organs to start shutting down. That's what it does. It causes organ failure, and there are certain organs of your body, your pancreas for one, that really, once it gets too far out of whack, there's no recovery from it. It's kind of like, being on a race course. You know, once you get in the dirt, you're done. And pretty much the same thing with this. Not the greatest analogy in the world, but it when you get off course with it, a good friend of mine had the same thing. His mother went to the hospital, complained of severe stomach pains, and they sent her home. And the following week, she had the same problem. They told her to see her doctor. She went and saw her doctor. He thought they were nuts at the hospital. On a Wednesday night, she went back to the hospital again, complaining of the severe stomach pains. And by Saturday morning, she was dead, severe pancreatitis. And, it happens. It's the way it is. And if it's not recognized early on and stopped, it's you're going to succumb to it irregardless. So, but I do agree in most respects with the fact of having a good, healthy immune system and eating a good, healthy diet. I don't think that enough really can be said about that. Even from my own perspective, I always thought I ate halfway decent anyway. Not a big red meat eater, not a big fried food eater, no family history. But I dropped dead anyway, irregardless. From my perspective, I'm looking into more and more of the things that are being told to us that are not true. And then to everybody that will listen, and I don't push it down anybody's throat. If you want to listen to what I got to say, fine. If you don't like what I say, tell me to be quiet and I'll shut up. the mere fact, and the research is there to prove it, that if you keep your blood level cholesterol, your overall cholesterol count, 200 or slightly below, like they're telling everybody, you die at the same rate as somebody that doesn't care. So that's obviously not good. We tell people to go on a low-fat diet, and then we tell them that they should get 30% of their dietary calories every day from fat. We also know through research that doesn't work. People don't really lose weight and so on. They lose it in the beginning because most of it's what we call water weight. You would have lost it anyway if you just run around the block and sweat. And the diet is three times the amount of fat that you really need in your diet every day to keep things down. The real research shows that you keep your total cholesterol 150 and your LDL cholesterol below 80, plaque can't form in your arteries. That's a novel thought, isn't it? But keep telling you all this other crap out here, and I'm working on cleaning everything up, and I research things out. I probably spend more time doing that now. I probably should be finishing up my book, which is about 9/10 done. But I don't have as much interest in the book as much as I do about my own life right at the moment. I put everything else ahead of myself. And at this point in my life, I come first. And, you got to be around to finish the damn book, And so that's my game plan. And I read voracious amounts of stuff. And I will say this to you. I am only interested in those who have actually done these trials on human beings with actual factual results that can be repeated. The rest of the stuff's crap. I don't care about it. Some guy who thinks he's got an idea and he wants to run with it and everything else, that's fine. But unless you've got actual blind studies and everything else to go with it, I really don't care. And, that's the way I've approached this thing. And, I'm within 5 pounds of my goal weight, which is to get to 195. I'm right at 200.2. And, I am now up to running 4 miles a day on the treadmill 6 days a week, and I do an hour a day, 4 miles per hour. And
good for you.
it's you know, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. But I lost the majority of my weight prior to doing any real bona fide exercise. The exercise is just a bonus at this point. And I eat very well. I just eat what I believe now to be the right things, and I think all of my numbers, you know, have shown that. So, at any rate, that's where I'm at. That's what I'm doing. And you know, the government, as far as I'm concerned, and I've always felt this way, about as crooked as a ram's horn. I don't care what they're putting out. Their food pyramid is nothing but crap. Their new thing, the food plate, that's more crap. You know.
I know, it's all upside down, isn't it?
I think it's easier to put things out to support certain industries. I mean, just think about it. Go back and look when Oprah Winfrey made a remark about the cattle industry. Boy, the God, they took her to court and everything else, and there was millions of dollars spent both sides of the fence. And I don't even remember what the hell the argument was about, nor do I care.
She won.
Okay?
She won.
But the point of the matter is that, you know, we have all these price supports for every different little thing that comes along. And you know, certainly the overall cattle industry, you know, it's proven. It's not nonsense that the diet that we consume in the Western diet is detrimental to your health. And that's okay with me if you want to eat red meat every day and you know, everybody in your family has done it and nobody's died. That's cool. I'm okay with it. It's not okay for me. You know, and the research, the solid research shows that that's the truth. So that's the direction I'm headed in, and I feel comfortable, you know, doing what I'm doing. And, you know, we'll see down the road. I intend to have some very sophisticated tests done to see and make sure that the program that I'm on is accomplishing what I want to do. You know, I had some severe heart damage done to my heart because of the fact, you know, that I did have an actual heart attack, deader than a doornail, and in that you lose some heart function. You know, the ability, what they call it, the ejection rate. My heart cardiologist calls it the heart squeeze, and by doing that, they can tell how much blood that your heart is able to pump out, and that gives you an idea of where your heart health is. Just in a short period of time, and don't forget, I didn't really start doing anything until late March, okay? And so during that period of time, I've increased my output from my heart as far as the heart squeeze or ejection rate is concerned by over 10%. You know, I've brought my cholesterol down, to 104 and raised my good cholesterol from 26 to 34. And that's without eating fish. I don't like fish. I'm not going to go out here. See, I'm not going to do things just because somebody says to do it. I don't like fish. So, I mean, you could stuff it in my ear, and I'm not going to want to eat it. You know, I'm just not. You know, there's certain pieces of fish. You know, I'll eat some tuna. I'll eat a piece of flounder now and then. I do not like salmon. I won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And I'm not going to eat it, and I will find other ways, and I have found other ways to bring up my good cholesterol. I've got up to 34. They want a 35 or better, so I'm right there. You know, I took my bad cholesterol down to 42 from 147. You know, and this is my own program. I put this together from all the research that I've done out there, from other people that have done these things. That's the way I'm headed. So. I don't even know how the hell we got on that subject, but anyway, that's where we're at. And I think it had to do with diet and chickens, kind of the same thing. So let's get back to that thing. So if you're looking at the scurf or the whitish material on the bird's comb, we're talking about a bird that's probably not in production or a bird that is not laying every day or has some issues with the gut health or other issues that would bring that about. But generally, that is... related to the rate of lay and that kind of thing. Darkness on the points, again, obviously we're not in a wintertime setting now, but it's kind of like a little bit of a cyanotic effect. There may be a gut issue going on. There could be an issue with blood flow. We see this lots of times with birds that have ascites, which is the new term called water belly, right ventricular heart failure in the bird, any kind of heart abnormality would probably cause these types of things in the bird. You can't put your finger on it exactly and say what it is, but this is what you're basically looking at. That is not healthy. We all know it. and you should try to do the best you can to alleviate that. Usually putting a bird in the molt will probably bring them around as far as the laying cycle is concerned. As far as the other things, you know, check for gut health. You want to check worms. You want to check coccidiosis. You want to take a look at the droppings. Droppings of the bird should be relatively tight, but not they shouldn't be so tight that they have no moisture in them at all. That usually leads you to believe there's this dehydration issue with those type of birds.
Yeah, Peter, I missed something there, and I'm so sorry because I really was listening. But you start out by saying the black points on the comb, and then went into ascites from that.
Ascites is a term now that they use for the old term water belly. We have talked about it here on the show on several different occasions.
Does that affect the black points that happen?
It can be the bird's respiratory system can be failing, especially if a bird is overweight, higher altitudes, a bird that is having a respiratory issue of some sort. We can start to see, because the comb is just loaded with all kinds of little capillary blood vessels and so on and so forth. When things are good, the blood's pumping all over the place. So we usually see birds, you know, redheaded and everything else. Some of it is hormonal related to the bird's condition of lay again. But as birds go on with the laying cycle, we do start to see that scurf appear. When we get the black tips, it is a little bit of a blood flow problem. Maybe it could be a gut issue. It could be any one of those things.
Okay.
I'm not saying the bird has.
I have one hen. She's very healthy. She's out in the sunshine. She's doing all the things I know to do to make them healthy. And then she's got just a few little black spots on her very bright red comb.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it doesn't seem to be bothering her, so I haven't done anything for it.
It doesn't. And it's hard. Like I said, it's hard to put your finger on exactly what's causing it. But by the same token, I get calls or emails almost every day from people who had a healthy bird yesterday but have a dead bird today. So it's not an issue you can always look at. And unfortunately, a lot of these birds that do succumb to whatever it is that's ailing them, we don't always have that opportunity, to have somebody do a post-mortem on them and that kind of thing. I try to encourage everybody that I talk to do their own, and I would say the majority of people are not capable from a knowledge standpoint, because it's easy to learn, but just can't bear to do it. Most of the people I deal with, a very good deal of them, that they're their pets, and they're not going to start cutting them up in little pieces to find out what's going on. But so we do see it. It's not uncommon for a bird to be in good flesh, to look healthy today and drop dead tomorrow. And in a lot of cases, that is a heart failure type of an issue. Sometimes it can be other issues that you see with birds. We're going to talk about one here sometime today about canker in birds, trichomoniasis. I'm seeing more and more of it. I'm seeing more and more nasty cases of it, and I'm seeing more and more that seem to be resistant. We're treating a few around the countryside now with two different medications, trying to get it under control. And, left unchecked, you have dead birds. So I don't know if I answered the person's question, but it's the best I can do from where I'm sitting. And, it's an issue that I would look into, look into their droppings and stuff. And it's hard to tell if a bird is having a respiratory issue. But generally, you start looking at birds overweight, too many treats, too much food, not enough exercise. We have gotten away from, as much as we've done it to ourselves as humans, become more sedentary every day. We've done the same thing with our farm animals that we keep. Chickens are foragers, and a lot of us have forgotten that. And being cooped up in a coop all day doesn't give them the exercise. And we all know that it causes behavioral problems and everything else. So, because left to their own volition, birds generally, if they're happy, once they get out in the yard, they'll, for the most part, spread out. You might have favorite ones that hang out with each other, but as a general rule, they're not clumped up in one tight little knit flock. you know, usually we'll see that when there's danger or they're not happy with something somewhere. But that's the best I can do on that one.
I've got one more to follow up here. Let's see what we got. Let me scroll down and get the next one here. Let's see. Pat, maybe you can answer this one, so I'll save this one for you here a little bit later. This is a loaded one. I won't even cover it. There was, why would an otherwise healthy 8-week-old chick die? That's a loaded question there.
healthy in whose eyes?
Good point. Good point, yep. So let's see if you got any other specific ones here. I can answer that one for her. Where's another one here? Oh, I emailed you a picture. I emailed you a picture, Peter. If you'll go to your email, I will go to commercial break. If you'll go to your email and check a look at that picture, I'll ask you the question when we come back that relates to that picture. And so if you'll check that, that'll be great. And folks, you're listening to Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. What are we doing today? We're debunking a lot of myths, rumors, and things that you hear on blogs and forums, like we do every day when we have experts on here on the radio show. And again, we'll be back right after this short break.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's EggCartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
This looks like a job. You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today, of course, being Monday, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. And so he sent him over a picture that I received from a fan yesterday. And actually, I think the question or the comments is located in that email, Doc. So I don't need to read anything to you other than kind of what's going on there. And she's going to listen to the archive a little bit later. But it's a picture, I believe, of I think it's a hen and pretty much with a close, not a bare back, but pretty darn close to it. What say you, my friend?
Well, let me see here. Let me read what she says here.
Okay.
Peter, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's reading the in the email.
Well,
in the,
it almost looks like the feathers are bleached. It's kind of weird looking, really, but it looks. Trying to see here. Let me see if I can.
I can possibly get her to send you another picture of detail later today. She's actually
because I'm looking at a picture now, but I've magnified it quite a bit, and I may be right, I may be wrong, but it looks like possibility of lice. There's appears to be down in the lower left hand, not quite in the corner, I'd say about 2 inches from the corner, there appears to be what appears to be a grain of rice, which would indicate to me that it might be lice of some sort. And if you kind of look around further, and again, this is just shooting from the hip here because this is tough to look at in a picture, but it may be nothing. It may be just the way it is. But there are other smaller areas over on the right side, about the middle of the screen, but about another inch or two from the side. There's another roundish white. There's a couple of other little dots all over the place. And I'm wondering if it isn't some sort of lice. That's what whether it's lice, mites, or whatever, it's taking its toll on the feathers. They almost look bleached. So I'm assuming then that's absence of the feather material on the feather shaft, but the bottom part still has material. Looks just like lice to me. Of course, I could be wrong, but even in demagnifying this, now that I know where these points were that I was looking at, I can still see the little tiny white specks. I would treat it. Again, we're looking at treating with diatomaceous earth, just because diatomaceous earth is in a bird's either in their feed or in the coop or nest boxes or even a dust box. I'm not a big fan of that stuff, as the only thing that you're going to use. That's going to be my guess. It looks like it's peppered with little tiny white spots. And again, they may be nothing. It may be scales from the skin. Who knows? It's the best I can do from where I'm sitting. But I'd probably get some poultry protector or something like that. I happen to like a lot of the more natural remedies. I'm not against diatomaceous earth, by the way. I just, for show birds, it's not good because it tears up the feathers. But as a general maintenance thing, it's okay. But it doesn't always do the job like a lot of people would like it to do. But that's what I would probably do. I would look to get something along the lines of. And what I like about the poultry protector, the fact number one that it's natural. Number two, you can saturate the bird with it. You're not going to hurt it. You know what I mean? You can soak it right down. You can take it and spray it in that one particular area and just keep wetting it until it's done. And after it dries, you can do it again if you want. You can do it tomorrow again. You can't do that with any of the inorganic products that are out there. Most of them or one-time treatment, and then you've got to wait 2, 3, 4 weeks before you can come back and do it again. Meanwhile, if it doesn't do the job, you know, you've got a further problem. Part of what we're seeing there, but I don't think so, could be from the rooster treading the hen, but you're missing the upper part of the feather, and they have that bleached out appearance to me, like they've been attacked by lice or something along those lines. So I think that's the approach I would take if the bird were mine. Best I can do from where I'm sitting.
Okay, great. Pat, did you have any comment? You were going to ask him something before we, I think, went to break.
Oh, well, yes, Peter, that's really a good answer that you just gave, because more and more it seems like I'm getting questions too about, gosh, my hen has a bare back. And then the way to analyze it, go through sort of that decision tree that you came to life, I think it was a really good thought process. I just wanted to thank you for that. And the question I had, Peter, is twice now, in two different batches, I've incubated chicks. They look great, and then about 1 week old, all of a sudden one gets either wry neck or just seems to lose interest in life. You know, there's no pasty butt or anything. It's just like they just go listless, or they'll just somehow have their nervous system all of a sudden go a little weirdo. Any comments or thoughts on that? And the others are all fine, and they're still all fine.
Would you have an opportunity to observe the dropping of the bird at all?
Yeah.
Other than the fact, if it didn't have a pasty butt, that's one thing, but if it had diarrhea, that's another.
I did not. It did not have diarrhea or pasty butt.
Did it appear to be a chick that was actually thriving and just gave up, or is it a chick that was not thrifty in the beginning and just didn't notice
it? It was not thrifty to start with.
It wasn't thrifty. Yeah, it wasn't thrifty.
Don't seem to have a will over it. You know?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, when we hatched chicks, you know, even if we got 100% hatch, which does happen on occasion, not every one of them ends up being viable for a multitude of reasons that we've talked about before on the show. You know, the age of the egg, the turning,
the humidity, timing,
the temperature, all of these things. I don't think I talked about this last time, but I did have a person a couple of weeks ago who got a hold of me on the weekend, and they had, I think I did talk about it a little bit, but they wanted me to tell them how or what kind of hatch they could expect from an incubator that was at the point in time still incubating, but had not been kept at the proper temperature. It was actually a lower temperature. You know, as the birds get as the birds start to develop in the shell, you're better off with a cooler temperature as they are incubating than you are with a hot one, because of the amount of heat given off as they are growing. And most people don't understand they are consuming food while they're growing at the same time. And so they, as they grow and do these things, their metabolism gives off a lot of heat. So extra heat from an incubator that's overheating or has completely stopped and the air is not circulating now, you wouldn't think. You say, well, you know, it only got to X amount of degrees and it's no big deal. The issue is not necessarily how hot it got overall, but how hot it got in between each egg. And Brinzi, with their incubator design, they did away with their octagonal ones. They used to have some really, really super-duper incubators that were for larger amounts of eggs and stuff. But they took that octagonal design, and they were able to, through using electronic sensors and stuff, put a sensor basically in between each and every egg and then watch the airflow around those eggs, but at the same time record the temperature in between each egg. And so that through that design of the incubator and the airflow being at the top and going all around it, rather than if you look at your conventional incubators, whether it be a hovabator sitting on a table or it be a cabinet-type incubator. You have basically a rectangular box with a fan on it blowing air. And you've got upper right and left dead spots. You have nothing to circulate the air into those corners, so eggs in those particular areas may get hotter, colder, whatever. So anyway, she had a problem, this person did, with incubation, and I tried to do the best I could to walk her through it. But what ends up happening there is you get a straggled hatch. They start hatching those that are, because when the temperature was found out to be low, then they got another thermometer, fixed the thing up and whatever, and they went and increased the temperature to where it belonged, which then started to bring the hatch more into a better window of opportunity. But still in all, you can look for about a 50, 55, 60% hatch, depending on the age of the eggs. The older the eggs, the more mortality you'll have. Don't forget that incubation is a controlled loss of moisture. And older eggs have already lost a good percentage of moisture. The eggs, that's why we don't like to hatch eggs that are, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks old. While they will hatch, those that have been held properly, the weaker ones won't. They die early, or they die late, or they get stuck in the shell because of too much loss of moisture. So there's a multitude of things that go into it. So if a chick is unthrifty generally when it first comes out of the shell, if it's not thrifty and hasn't picked up speed after it's dried off and everything else, from my perspective, speaking for myself, I would probably eliminate that bird. Because unless you're a caretaker, unless you're, you know, I mean, if you're doing it, to raise birds to sell for production or whatever, you have an unthrifty bird that's going to be needy for the most part of its life. And there are a lot of folks out there that do that. I assist people every day that are in this position, and I'm fine with it. They're your birds, and I'm here, to do things. Just as I have people who I will recommend that they do something, and that's actually quite common to do, and then they turn around and say they want to do something else. My email return is, go on with it, I really probably should put another line in there, quit annoying me if you're not going to pay attention, and just go on and do your own stuff. What are you asking me for if you're going to go and do what you want to do anyway? And not that I'm God, but a lot of these things are pretty simple, folks. I mean, when we talk about canker here, hopefully in a few minutes, it's pretty straightforward. It's not rocket science. You find out you got it, you deal with it, you take care of it. If you don't take care of it, you have dead birds. As simple as that. And if you think your method is better, then go ahead with it. So what are you asking me for?
I've got.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what we're all about here, bringing the experts on, kind of debunking the crap that you see on the blogs and the forums that it's going to lead you down the wrong path, may end up killing your chickens. I mean, it's just amazing.
Andy, before you get started, let me just say one thing, because I got an email here from somebody, and it's just kind of irking my jaw just a little bit. When you have a problem, and this goes human or otherwise, okay, you catch it early, you got a good chance of curing it quickly.
Yes.
You got a good chance of curing it easily, and you probably have a good chance of curing it with some sort of holistic method. I don't get upset if somebody wants to take a natural approach to something, but the majority of the time, by the time they get to me and they've tried all the other things that don't work, okay, they're already in trouble, and they end up with a dead bird anyway.
Pat was on when I told her this. I got an email from a young lady. You're not going to believe this, because I don't think it was. I mentioned this last Monday, and she said, "I had a sick chicken that was sneezing and coughing. Okay, my neighbor said to immediately kill it, so the rest of my flock doesn't get infected. So we did. Now I have another sneezing and coughing chicken. Do I need to kill it, or is there something else I can do?" I promise you, that's basically what the email said.
Now, I have a solution to that.
Oh, my.
I have a solution to that. Real simple. Kill the stupid neighbor.
Thank you. I was like, are you kidding me? I said, no. I said, treating chickens is not, I mean, it's not that difficult. You can get syringes. You can get antibiotics. You can get medications. Holy cow. And you can do this yourself. Why? I can't imagine anybody saying, oh, it's coughing, sneezing, better kill it before it infects the rest of your flock.
That's industry standard, Andy. I mean, they're just quoting back what industry does with biosecurity.
Yeah,
and
just Dr.
McRae told us that, you know, a sick bird goes out. That's it. There's no prisoners.
Yeah.
Well, their approach is different. The commercial people have their fair share of sick birds. Trust me.
Okay. Absolutely.
They do not go through every day and pick out birds that are close to death and generally kill them. Some people do, some people don't. It's up to the grower. It's up to you how many you want to pick up today, because your job as a grower for a commercial company is they bring the birds in, they send one person to help put the birds in. You've got to be home to put the birds in. You have to be prepared. And after that, when that chick bus leaves your farm, you are on your own. The serviceman come around once or twice a week just to see if you've got your fans running, your temperature good, and see what your mortality is and if everything's going good. But anything that dies in that chicken house overnight, it's your job to pick them up the next day, especially in the heat. And they've gotten a lot better at that. They're able to, in some of these real bad temperatures, they're able to keep the inside of these chicken coops because of insulation and tunnel ventilation and fogging and stuff. They're able to keep, 70, 75 degrees when it's 90 plus outside. So they've come a long, long way. But as far as mortality is concerned, mortality on a commercial chicken farm, you are at the mercy of the chicken company. If they decide today that all the chickens they're hatching today are going to be vaccinated with XYZ vaccine that they've not used before, you may be picking up dead birds till the day they go out. And then again, they may never have any reaction to it at all. It just depends. And that's the way the contracts are written. A 30-day notice by either party terminates the contract. So if you're not happy with your grow-out company, you write them a letter and you tell them 30 days they're done. Or when the next flock goes out, you don't want any more from them, here's my notice, you're done. But then the problem is getting picked up by another company because that company wants to come in and see what kind of grower you are. You know, it's kind of like, you're not going to loan your car to somebody who has an accident every 5 minutes, so it's the same thing. If you're a poor grower and your mortality's high and you're always finishing at the bottom of the rung in the payout every flock that goes out, they're not going to put chickens back in your chicken house. You're going to sit there with a huge-ass mortgage with no chickens in it and no way to pay the mortgage. So lots of times you just shut up and you take it and you go on with it. And they don't pay you. They don't pay you another nickel as a general rule. So they've got a whole lot of issues that are not related to saving every bird on the place. Certainly they want them all to grow out, but they've got to be able to put them in the processing plant. And they suffer from their own stupidity in many areas. And biosecurity is one of them.
Very good. Let's see if we can get another one here. Let me scroll down. Oh, the young lady that had the question about kind of the general question, why are my chickens dying? I think she came back here. And just a second, and I'll get over there to her question. A little bit more information. I also asked her if she could possibly call in and give us a little bit more details. We want to help her out with this. Let's see. Here we go. Initially, it was, why would an otherwise healthy 8-week-old chick die? No signs of injury or illness. And then she's, I think she's listening, Nikki. And more info on the chick dying. They are on clean shavings and in a covered cooper run, eating and drinking. Concern because it's actually the third to actually die. These are silkies, and there are no other birds present. Let me get over here to the switchboard and see if she's may have actually called in here, and we can maybe bring her on live. Let me see if this may be her. Nikki, is that you on the air holding?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Hey, Good. Thank you very much. Yeah, we wanted to do what we could, but just a little vague. And so we've got Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, on, and he may ask some very specific questions that may help us kind of figure out maybe what's going on with your chick. So I'll turn it over to you. Thanks for calling in.
So these birds were approximately 8 weeks?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, any respiratory issues, snotty nose, runny nose, coughing, choking, sneezing, swollen eyes, or any of that?
No, sir.
Okay.
Everybody seems pretty fine. They're eating and drinking, and one died over the weekend, and then another one died this morning.
Okay. Now, the way you try to have to look at this, at least from my perspective, okay, is that if there is no eye involvement, no runny eye, no swollen face, no coughing, sneezing, no choking, no mucus in the mouth, none of that kind of stuff. And the birds, you know, when you last saw the bird alive, was breathing like any other bird would, then it lends itself to a gut problem, okay? I mean, it just makes more sense to look at it in that type of a picture. So then can you tell me what the droppings of the bird would have looked like or not?
No, I haven't really paid close attention to the droppings. They're in a pretty big run,
okay.
And that's my next goal, is to look at the droppings.
Okay.
But they're eating and drinking because the water is going down.
Okay, medicated food or not?
Yes, it is medicated.
Okay, all right. I would urge you to take a look at the droppings, because I think therein lies the problem. You know, certainly could be wrong, but in the absence of any kind of respiratory issue, we generally always will then look at the gut and see what's going on there. You know, you may have heard me say earlier on that a preponderance of the immune cells for the bird's immune system are within the gut itself. So if there's a problem there, you know, the immune system automatically becomes impaired. When you found this bird dead, what was the position of it?
They were just laying on their side. No ruffled feathers, no injury from any other, you know, it wasn't like they'd gotten in a fight with each other, which I think they're too young to do that. And, you know, it didn't look like it had been a snake had tried to get it or anything. It was just laying on its side.
Okay. Well, I don't think there's not enough evidence to go on any specific issue. The other thing that comes to mind is that they are silkies. They generally can be problem children, susceptible to a lot of things genetically. Not saying that's what it is. They're beautiful birds. There isn't any question about that. Probably one of the most popular, if not the most popular, amongst a lot of folks. I think what I would do is see if you can get a good idea of what the droppings are looking like, and really observe them. I've said this before on the show. Take a 5-gallon bucket, sit in a run, and just take a look-see, and see if you can pick up anything that you believe to be odd, different, and not normal. And you can always send me an email. Remind me that we talked on the show here, so that I'll answer you as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim, I would probably, as a precautionary thing, I would probably take about 4 teaspoons or so of the apple cider vinegar and put it in a gallon of water. Can't hurt the birds at all, but it can turn the intestines a little bit more acidic, and if there is something going on, might hold it off to get an idea of what's going on.
Okay.
You know, and notice a couple of things about gut issues. The birds will just, if this is what it is, they will slow down, and birds that you normally couldn't catch, you now can catch. Birds that appear a little bit sleepier than the others, in severe cases of just, let's say, coccidiosis, they will just stand around, droop their wings, ruffled up feathers, and just fall asleep, go sit in the corner, that kind of thing. So, you know, without doing a post-mortem on the bird per se, it's you know, a little bit difficult, but that's the approach that I would take if the bird were mine. There's nothing to say that this is a respiratory issue. It's not spinning out of control. You don't have, 10 birds dying at the same time. They're not sneezing all over the place. I think this is probably, if it's not a genetic abnormality, this is a problem that can probably be fixed fairly easily. The other thing you have to look at is the birds, and this is one thing you can do while you're observing them as well. Are they litter eating? Are they eating junk? It's called pica, where birds, instead of eating their feed, they'll eat other birds' droppings more readily than they'll eat feed. They'll eat bedding, anything but what they should be eating, and that can be detrimental to them as well. You want to pick up birds, handle them, see if their crops are emptying. You might want to do that first thing in the morning before you even let them out, put any food out. Certainly, if you get any more mortality, we need to talk about it some more, and you can always send me an email, and we can try to help you out that way.
Is there anything you would go ahead and treat them for? You were saying gut issues and coccidia comes to mind. Would it be okay to go ahead and treat them for that?
It wouldn't hurt. Certainly wouldn't hurt. If I were going to treat them with anything, I would use sulfadimethoxine in the drinking water, 12.5% solution, very mild on the kidneys, a very broad spectrum. The reason I wouldn't go in with Ampryl is Ampryl specific to coccidia only. So if this is an issue with some sort of bacteria other than coccidiosis, you'll have wasted all that time medicating with Ampryl or Cord, Ampryl Cord being the same product. So, you would have wasted 5 to 7 days and still ended with more dead birds. Doesn't mean that you'll use the sulfadimethoxine and stop the problem, but if it does, you'll know where you're at. You might not specifically know what it is, but you'll know for sure that it was a gut issue. So I think that's the approach.
Is that something we can get from you?
You can go online and order it, sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All
not
right,
overly
I have
expensive.
Two other things I'd like to order.
Yeah, it's $16.95 for a 16-ounce bottle. It comes with all the directions you'll need. But by all means, keep in touch with me on this. I'll help you every way I can.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All righty. Let's go ahead and kind of get started. I know you want to talk a little bit about canker and a couple of other topics of play. So we've got about 30 minutes, so I'll turn it over to you. And whether you want to wrap up on via smell and then get to canker, start canker now, make sure we get that out of the way, and then continue with smell and taste like we will next Monday.
Yeah, we could do that because I also want to talk about fly strike. I've had a couple of incidents here in the office with that as well, so that can be prevented pretty easily. So I just want to run over that with everybody a little bit. And so if we can always do the other part, lead off with that next week, the smell, taste, and whatever. I want to bring it all together and that part of it. I want to, because we did talk about it all at different times, and I want to bring the taste, the smell, and all of that, and how it can interact and does interact with the chicken's behavior. So people can be thinking about it, think about any questions they want. I'll answer it best I can. It's an interesting thing, and we did talk about the chicken genome and how it relates to humans and the research that's going on there. And we did talk about a lot of the things on the smell part. So we're going to talk about the taste part of it the next time around. But I'd like to get into the canker part of this. Canker is a term that we use for birds that have a disease that is easily spread. Trichomoniasis is the scientific basic name for it. It is a protozoa, and do not confuse this with coccidia. Coccidia are different. They are a protozoa, but this is a little bit different. Medications for coccidia will do nothing, and I repeat, nothing for this disease. So if you find that you have canker, and I'll go over the symptoms and everything else here in a minute, but if you find that you have it, you'll need to get an anti-protozoal that will handle canker. So some of the things that you'll see with canker, it is something that you'll see generally in chickens, pigeons, doves, birds of prey, hawks, and that nature. And when you get into hawks and stuff, they don't like the term canker. They like to, I guess it's because it used to be a king's sport, and they call it frounce. And I don't know even where it got its name that way. I'm just assuming that that's why they don't want it. So canker probably sounds too simple, too harsh. This is a disease that's readily spread bird to bird. can be devastating for the bird if it's not caught early. This is, again, this is one we were talking about before. I said if you catch something early, this one, left unchecked, you will have dead birds.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen in a matter of 7, 8, 10 days. Sometimes it takes longer. What bothers me about this is that we're seeing more and more of it all the time. And we're seeing more and more resistance to the basically only two medications out there now that are still left on the market for this. Years ago, we would have used dimetrazole, which would have been Emtryl. A lot of people might have known it as Emtryl. We would have used its sister drug called Ipropan. And they've all been taken off the market for various reasons, mostly because they were carcinogens, meaning they caused cancer. And even today, on the human side, metronidazole, which is the active ingredient name in the product called Flagyl, it has a disclaimer in the directions there about the fact that it has had some problems with being a carcinogen as well. So at any rate, what you're going to see with canker lots of times will be just weight loss. People and this goes back to what we were talking about, knowing your birds, knowing your flock, getting the bucket out, sitting around, picking up birds. Don't pick the same one up every day, even though it may be your favorite. Pick somebody else up. Take a look at them, you know, just a little look-see, look in the mouth, look in the you know, look the bird over a little bit, look at the vent, see if there's any mites and what have you. It's really, really important because canker goes unchecked many, many times because people don't understand it. It can be confused with wet pox. And generally you'll know the difference with the canker. It has a little bit of an odor to it where we generally don't see that odor with the wet pox. But nonetheless, it can be devastating. They look like little yellow spots growing in the mouth. They can be any size, from little tiny dots to little tiny mushroom type things. Not necessarily the shape of a mushroom, but they can be raised and quite thick. They do attach themselves to the inside of the mouth, or what we call the mucosal tissues of the mouth and the sinus cavity. Often found in the nasal cleft, that's a split in the top of the mouth, which leads to the infraorbital spaces in the around the eye. So you can have this stuff grow right out through the bird's eye. You can eventually, if it gets that bad, you can squeeze this out of those infraorbital spaces to some degree. When it gets to that point, it takes a lot of time, effort, and medication to get rid of it.
Peter, can I ask you a question about
sure.
that? You
sure.
said when you can squeeze the canker out of a bird's eye. What does that look like? Is it a white kind
it's,
of
it's
mass?
A no, it's more yellow than anything else. When I say you can squeeze it out, is if it hasn't already attached to the insides of the eyelids or other tissues, it's not going to come out as easily as you might have a sinus infection where you're able to cajole the pus that may be in there out, and it comes out as a more liquid thing. This is going to be a little bit harder than that, and you may not be able to get it out without heavy doses of medication. I've got
wow.
A case or two right now where we have the birds on very heavy doses of the metronidazole and the ronidazole, as much as the ronidazole, we're probably in the 100 milligram plus category there, and about 500 on the metronidazole. So we're pushing the upper limits of it. When you get into a situation where you've got it where the standard treatment doesn't work or is not working, usually it's a once-a-day treatment of a tablet or so, and it generally 5 to 7 days it'll recede and go away. The problem that we're seeing is that the 5 to 7 day deal kind of puts it in check, but it's still there. It doesn't bring it away. So what we've done by giving more of the medication, we spread it out during the day so that most people can't give the medication 3 or 4 times a day. They're not around, they're working, or whatever the case may be. So what we've ended up doing there is they'll give the one tablet early in the morning, put the Ronazole in the water for the rest of the day, and then come home and bang them with it again in the tablet. And it seems to be working, but my problem with all of it is what happens down the road when none of this works. That's the other issue. I said it once, I've said it 100 times on the show, naloxone in the water goes a long way. This disease is spread basically through the water. So when you start looking at that, it would behoove you to put oxone in the water on a regular basis if indeed you feel you have this. Now, this can be spread by free-flying birds. This can be spread by doves that come in and eat your chicken feed and drink out of the same water, leave it behind. Going to be in the nasal cavities of the offending birds. Then they're going to drop it in the water. Your bird's going to come by, and your bird's going to suck it up. Now, this can coexist in a bird. This is the other part about it. You don't know when exposure actually took place, for the most part, because it may not show itself right away. Okay, if your birds are content and they're happy and all of this stuff, it may not do anything for a long time until they're stressed, out of food, out of water, moving, predators, hot weather, cold weather, all of the things we've talked about before that are stressors for birds can bring this out, and then it starts to show itself. And the bird that has it is continually then spreading it in the water every time it takes a drink. So, the oxine can go a long way in mitigating this disease, keeping it under control, and maybe keeping it from ever getting a foothold in your flock. But generally, where will you see these lesions? You'll see these lesions anywhere in the bird's mouth, basically. Typically in the corners of the beaks, along the edges of the beak, under the tongue, top of the tongue, over the glottis, which is where the bird breathes. That's directly in the floor of the mouth, right behind the tongue. If it grows there and it starts growing over the glottis and cuts off the bird's air, you've got a dead bird. The inappetence comes from, you'll see them go off their feed and start to lose weight, because as this starts to grow down the back of the throat, you will see very large lesions back there. It's the equivalent of you having a sore throat and then the bird doesn't want to eat. This can get down into the crop, down into the intestines, can go ballistic, can go into the body cavity and be on the visceral organs, the outside of the intestine. It's just everywhere. It's a nasty, nasty disease. It's a little different than most protozoas. It's a flagellated protozoa, and what that means to you is that it has the ability to swim. So it can get around. It can travel. So that's the way it gets around. That's the places that it hangs out. Again, the metronidazole, which we call canker tablets, and the ronidazole, which is a water-soluble product for using this in combating this particular disease. I think that once you get it under control, if it is a problem in your flock, that the continued use of the oxine will keep you from having to go back and do this again. But we see it a lot in racing pigeons. And they're probably the biggest offenders, because they treat whether they have it or not, because in many cases you can't see this. And it's spread amongst pigeons from the infected parents, generally feeding the pigeon milk from the parents to the offspring. So when pigeons feed their milk to their babies and they're infected, then the babies are infected, and then the babies spread it as they get older, or they die before they get a chance to spread it. So it's a very prolific disease, very easily spread. Another one that doesn't have to be, observe your flock, take a look outside, open the window, look outside, go outside, sit down with the bucket, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, pick up some birds, observe them, look at the mouth. It goes a long way in getting this thing under control and keeping it from taking over your flock. And as we all know, this generally does not attack the runt in your flock. This always attacks the one that you really care about, the mainstay, the matriarch of your flock, or whatever the case may be. This is where this thing usually settles down.
Why is that, Peter? I mean, it does seem like my favorite ones tend to...
Again, probably because of the fact that birds that are... I'll give you for instance here, in a breeding flock, the corticosteroids that are given off by birds in their endocrine system when they're under pressure. Males and females that are of breeding age are under tremendous pressure, obviously, to breed. That has a corticosteroid effect, especially on the male, somewhat less on the female, but nonetheless on her as well. And it actually turns off the immune system because this is an agitated state, the fight or flight syndrome. The immune system isn't needed for this particular endeavor, so we turn it off. So it makes them vulnerable to things at that age or at that stage of the game. The females, usually the ones that are in the hierarchy, are always trying to maintain control. So they have a problem with it as well because they are on a higher degree of alert than the one that's at the bottom. Once at the bottom of the pile, they already know where they are, so they know damn well to keep their place, so they're not under any kind of stress at all, for fear of a better word, they're eaters and crappers, the one at the bottom of the list, you know that. That's what they do. They're eating crap all day long, and that's it. And they're happy with anything, and they're always the ragged part of the bunch, but... In lots of cases, they may be runty and stuff, but they may be healthier in the long run than some of the birds at the top of the pile. So it's always that hierarchy thing, and the corticosteroids that are produced. As a matter of fact, they're trying to come up with better ways to analyze if a bird is stressed. If you remember back when we started talking about all this stuff, taste and smell and behavior and all of these things, I mentioned there was a study being done about vocalization of birds down at the University of Georgia, because it's important not just for the commercial people, but the happier your flock is, the more productive they are, okay? If you don't think there are nervous eaters in your flock just as there are nervous eaters in people, you're mistaken. They're there. They're there in cattle. They're there in pigs. There are those that eat. There are those that don't eat. There's those that eat a lot. There's those that don't eat enough for various reasons. Some of it genetic, some of it not, some of it because of the hierarchy of where you are in the group of birds or the flock or whatever. So all of these things, the better control you can have of that, the better off you are. And, back when we talked about smell a week or so ago, or whatever it was, we talked about, changing the behavior of birds before they're even born. It's possible to change the behavior of a bird before it's even born. While it's in the shell, its environment outside of that shell has a direct effect on the bird inside the shell. And we can take birds that are in the shell and expose them in the latter parts of incubation, 16, 17, 18, 19 days of incubation, to a specific smell, and then expose those birds after they've hatched to that smell, and they will eat whatever is in that smell, okay? Let's say it's licorice. So they'll go to the licorice pot, and they'll eat more times out of the licorice than they will out of the non-scented one. And it's a very interesting scenario, but we do it for a reason. All of you might say, well, what the hell, who cares whether they eat food that's flavored or not, because then you can entice them to eat exactly what you want them to do. They'll be happier in the long run. That's how it's all being looked at. We looked at some of those parameters on those things. We'll get into that part a little bit more next week because of the time frames here, but it is an interesting thing, and it's what makes me want to do what I do every day. But it is fascinating stuff to see that when we look at some of these different things that we're able to do that nobody ever thought of before, to do the circadian incubation and manipulate the heat and the cold, and then have birds that grow out of that type of an incubation system and are then either less sensitive to heat and less sensitive to cold. Is a huge, huge thing. It's probably from being real, real practical for the backyard, or probably not so, but for the commercial people. I mean, if you're growing chickens in Saudi Arabia, you sure as heck want them to tolerate the heat. And if you're going to have a flock of chickens in North Dakota, I think you'd want them to be tolerant to the cold. So all of these things are important, and we are able to, without doing any genetic manipulation at all, that's the nice part of about it. You have not touched the genes that are there. You haven't introduced anything. You've just changed certain things within that particular gene pool and made it work in a different fashion through a different influence. So it's really, really pretty cool. But getting back to the canker, my purpose for saying this today is that I'm alarmed at the amount that I'm seeing. I'm alarmed at the fact that some of the medications are not working up to snuff. I would like to see more due diligence with folks taking care of this issue in their own flocks. You know, and you all know me. I don't care if you use Oxine. I don't care if you use Poultry Protector, Water Protector. No matter. Use something. I think that is more prudent for you and to go ahead and protect your flock.
Peter, there's a quick question in the
yeah.
chat room from New Dawn Farm Girl. She wants to know, do you have to use citric acid with the Oxine?
No, let me clear that up. Let me clear that up for
okay.
people.
Yeah, that's
activated Oxine just really turns it into more of a gas. I do not sell the activator. It's citric acid crystals. They look like rock candy. And if you'll remember back to the anthrax scare in Washington, D.C., at the Hart Senate office building, they used Oxine in its gaseous form to clear that office building of anthrax. And if you'll remember back, there was nobody entering that building that wasn't in those little doughboy spacesuits. And they had a machine sitting out in the parking lot, and took the Oxine and put it over the crystals and then blew it in as a gas into the building. So it can be deadly. The Oxine is chlorine dioxide and gives
right.
off obviously some sort of chlorine gas. It's possible, and I had a friend of mine who I went to school with, but it's been many years now, he's dead. He was mixing up chlorine for a swimming pool in a closed garage. And he mixed it up, and he had evidently made it too strong. It overwhelmed him. He passed out, and he died from the chlorine gas intoxication. So I'm not up for sending that stuff out to people. You don't need it. If you follow the directions that we send out with each and every bottle of Oxine, you can't go wrong.
This has come up several times, and the chlorine dioxide. There is a product called MMS, which is Miracle Mineral Solution, and it just uses a couple drops. That's it, just a couple drops of the Oxine, basically, and the citric acid. And apparently that's been quite a health product. I saw a movie called, and they were using it to treat malaria, and it would actually go in and cure people within 2 or 3 doses. But they were not mixing it in any great amounts at all. They were just mixing it in small doses, and then maybe drinking a few drops. So it's
and it's called MMS?
MMS. Miracle Mineral Solution. You can see it on the internet.
Yeah.
There's more and more posts.
Again, I can't say one way or another whether the stuff's good or bad. Just watching somebody espouse it on the internet makes me nervous in the first place. There's so much crap being put out on the internet that you can't tell the truth from the lies. I want to see the research that, in a controlled study, I want to see it repeatable. I want to see and make sure that whoever was given a particular dose of this, that they actually had whatever disease they were trying to cure. Because let's face it, malaria is probably worldwide the number one killer of humans anywhere. I can't begin to tell you how many million cases of malaria there are. You know, we've got all kinds of drugs that are out there, or that have been out there, and the majority of them no longer work. So, you know, look, sometimes things happen, and somebody comes up with something that's novel and it works, but I want to see the research behind it, you know, that shows that, you know, for instance, if I had a nickel for every time I've had people tell me they cured CRD by giving the birds a shot of penicillin, I could jump off a frickin' building somewhere.
Well, don't do that. It's not worth that.
It just isn't going to happen, folks. It just isn't going to happen. If you know how CRD works, you would know right off the bat that person telling you. And this is all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to say anybody lies. It's the notion that a bird who has a respiratory issue automatically has CRD, and that isn't necessarily true. It can certainly be true, but it can certainly be false. It can be certainly an E. coli infection. It could be coryza. It could be bronchitis. It could be CRD. It could be mycoplasma all by itself. There's a whole bunch of things that it could be until you know what you had, scientifically know what you had, and then what you treated with it to get it over and clear it of it, not just control it, clear it of it. There's a big difference between putting a medication on a bird and the thing goes away and you think you've got it under control until it shows its ugly head again somewhere else. Okay? So the reason, and I'll go through it real quick, the reason that penicillin can't work is the mode of action of penicillin is to destroy the cell wall. That's how it works. Every bacteria it comes in contact with, it's got a cell wall. It destroys the cell wall that opens up the nucleus of the cell, and it dies. Okay? It takes the protection away from the cell. It's like having a fortress, and somebody comes along, knocks down your walls, and you're standing there by yourself. It's about what it's equal to. Okay? Well,
yeah.
With mycoplasma, there is no cell wall. So it's impossible for the penicillin to have had an impact on the mycoplasma. Okay? So, again, it's knowing what you had, knowing what you used to cure it, and how you got there, and all of that stuff. So I would be interested in looking at it. I'll write it down so that I can go and take a look at it myself. But, you know, be careful with the things that, that talk about miracle cures, because I've run into a lot of it on the heart disease side. Here's one for you. I read a thing the other day. They're touting this supplement all around. And here's another thing. Everybody thinks they can supplement their way out of this stuff. They're out of your mind. Okay, if it was that easy, we'd all be doing it. Okay, red rice yeast or some crap like that. Okay, and this woman was espousing the fact that she'd been taking it for 12 weeks. Her cholesterol level was 265 when she started. Okay, and she was now down to 225. So I'm going, so big deal. You know, big deal. You know, so you don't want to change your diet, you don't want to go do any exercise, but you want to take this little yeast thing and think you're going to be doing something for yourself. You're still at your 225, you're still 75 points above where plaque won't form in your arteries, so, you know, go keep taking your supplement. You know, I just don't see it, you know, and there's no scientific proof of that, you know. So, I have to see it to believe it, I guess. I just can't see myself getting trapped into that thing of believing stuff. I've believed in more things before in my life that never worked, so I'm not interested in it anymore.
Well, the other side of that, though, Peter, you got to keep in mind is some of these things that have the scientific evidence and have worked beautifully in the past are not working any longer. I mean, we've got resistance to the antibiotics and to fleas, and you know, so things change, and sometimes that cutting edge isn't necessarily scientific quite yet, at least science as we know it.
Well,
I just had to put that in.
Yeah, but, you know, the whole idea of it is spending your money on a pig and a poke. You know, that's where it's the loss of time, just like I said before to the gal with the silky with the problem. We're much better off to lead with sulfadimethoxine in the drinking water if we think it's a gut problem than we are to go with Ampril. Because even if it is coccidia, let's assume for the moment that it turns out to be coccidia at the end of the day, okay? But we're still better off to have led with the sulfadimethoxine than to have spent 5 to 7 days medicating with the Ampril and finding out that it wasn't coccidia, and now you've got more dead birds and you're 7 days behind the eight ball. So you go with what you know, and you go with what has a better chance of working and taking care of the problem. That's all I'm saying. I know that there are some holistic and herbal products and things out there, because I know I have one hung up with our federal government right now in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I've been working on it since last week trying to get it released. You could get a damn illegal alien in here and illegal drugs faster than you can get this stuff in, trust me. Okay, I spent some last Thursday night, almost all day Friday, from the time I got out of bed this morning until just before I get on this program, trying to get this stuff released. It's sitting in Cincinnati, Ohio, in the quarantine, because they're trying to decide if this herbal product can be let in the country. Okay? So keep voting for big government, folks, because they impede people. All they do is get in the way.
There you go. And to follow up on that, too, if you think about it, every single drug that's called for killing people has been first approved by the FDA.
Thank you. That's the truth. I mean, you know, and I got to say that some of the stuff hasn't been beneficial. Obviously, it has. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we overlook an awful lot of things to get where we want to go, and I don't think it's a good deal. And that's all I'm saying about this MMS might be the best thing since sliced bread. It may be. You know, and we all know, and anybody that doesn't think this, that, you know, you need to rethink your thinking. But it's all about money. You got a damn thing to do with people. It's all about money.
And then I can't say this for fact, and, you know, we're all about trying to be as factual as we can on the show, but I would say that probably every single food recall in the last 5 to 10 years has been from a plant that gets FDA approved, USDA stamped.
Yeah.
USDA stamped. This is good for you. No problems. It's all clean and dandy and free of disease. And then lo and behold, there's a call from that plant that's been USDA approved.
And part of the reason for that is that, for instance, you know, can only talk about things that I know, you know, somewhat directly about. But if you look at problems with commercial poultry, it's because of what they call the line speed. The line speed is how many birds go by an inspector in a given period of time. Okay? I say to you that when birds are going by at 100 plus a minute, you ain't got time to see nothing. I mean, really, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And all the, you know, and all of the poultry companies, well, what they want is more birds to go through the processing plant. It's throughput. That's all it
is. Haven't you seen all the posts lately in the last 2, 3 months, 6 months? There have been post after post coming about, I know you're on top of this too, is that they're trying to limit USDA inspector visits. They're trying to get someone on site to inspect their own site so they don't
have to. I was just going to bring that up. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's the fox watching the hen house. Come on.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's a good point. Absolutely.
True. I mean, the whole idea is crazy, and then you want to do something. Trust me, this is a strictly an herbal product. It's approved for use in Europe. It's labeled by a very large company from Europe. They're a huge company, so it's got nothing to do with that. It's just that I had to fill out a disclaimer form. Then they tell me I don't need it because it's going to come under their scrutiny anyway. And now I'm still waiting to hear back. So I said to the woman, I said, you know, in what millennium will I ever see my product? Maybe. And she said, maybe 3 to 5 days, maybe not. So, and they certainly don't work over the weekend, I can tell you that, because I've been tracking it, and all it says is that it, as of Sunday, it's still in quarantine in Cincinnati, Ohio. And, you know, the shipper was in touch with me this morning, wanting to know what gives, and I emailed that person what was going on, and I made the comment that it was easier to get illegal aliens in this country and illegal drugs than it was to get this product in, and the person wrote back, said, ha ha, same thing here. So there you go.
All righty. We've got about 1 minute remaining. Peter, thank you very much for joining us today. She just said in my ear. So thank you so much for joining us today. Awesome, awesome program. As always, folks, I'll just say this till I'm blue in the face. You can go nowhere and get what you can get at First State Vet Supply, meaning when you get your item that's probably going to save your flock, your chicken's life, you're going to get all the directions on how to use it, just like the oxine he was talking about. If you get it, and all the way down to the individual bird, you can get that nowhere. FirstStateVetSupply.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward, as always, seeing you again right here next Monday.
See you there, Andy. Take care.
So,
bye, Pat.
Bye, Peter. Thanks so much.
All righty. Awesome. FirstStateVetSupply.com. No reason to go anywhere else. And firsthand advice from our resident expert. Pat, 45 seconds. Take it away, my friend.
Okay, got it. Well, of course, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, was our special guest today with an open question and answer. I've got about 2 pages of notes here, personally. Of course, thanks to our chat room chickeneers, they were certainly chatty today, and thanks for all your questions and calling in. Of course, blogtalkradio.com provides our radio chat and the video services. And Andy Schneider is the chicken whisperer and the creator of this show. I'm Pat Foreman, and from all of us, absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.
Mm-hmm.